Session number 14976, Joseph Weir, Reel 7.
Mr. Weir, Reel 7. Have you any other memories of Marath, Mr. Weir?
No, well, thinking of Marath, you know, I know we're all back, and we're all in a bit of a state. Everybody was in a bit of a state. I mean, we had lost a lot of friends. And the thing that hurt us most is when word come through that the next night the people had went straight through the line. A certain, you know, and it, you know, it was hurting to think, well, hard luck, you know. And but I think the Marath and anybody in our brigade, I think that we won battles we would never forget. You know, and it, well, we didn't have much more in Africa after that. I mean, it was Wadi Akbar, it was nothing spectacular. Then we went up to Infeaderville, and that was it. Father's Africa, and that's when they told us we were finished fighting in the Middle East.
But you basically weren't doing anything.
We're doing nothing, you know, that was it. After Marath, that was it. You know, you just said we're finished fighting in the Middle East.
What happened after that?
Went right down to the Red Sea and started invasion training. And we just couldn't believe it, you know. And they said stop fighting in the Middle East. What to do? Change my name from Middle East Forces to Central Mediterranean Forces, and we thought we were going home actually, because they started painting the wagons, the camouflage colour we have at home, you know. Still didn't realise where we were going till we get we'd had the training.
What form did your training actually take? What kind of training were you doing?
Well, you got across the Red Sea, landing on the other side, you know, and going up with hands and knees and crawling, and officers shooting live with ammunition above your heads to keep your head down, sort of style. It was real infantry training, you know, because by then we had a lot of new lads, you know, a lot of young people coming in. And
you know where?
Oh, by the way, great thing, that was where they got me for stripe. And that was where we first got the small wirelesses for the forward platoons, you know, with the throat mic, the little throat mic, and there was so that each platoon had a wireless to phone back to me and to battalion. So that was a big improvement. But the microphones were very poor. You just went on the average day. And the fastened to your belt.
The wireless.
The whole lot fastened over your belt. And I don't think they kept them up, but they were good because, you needn't bring the words out. You could say it without making noise. Right? But that's where they came. And because I went to the forward companies to instruct several lads with this little wireless.
Mm-hmm. Have there been any changes? Or you say you lost a lot of men, and what about your own immediate officer? Had that changed?
No. The headquarters was still. I think the headquarters is about to see him. Yes.
Colonel Watson was still in command.
Colonel Watson. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What kind of training were you doing? You say was it all to do with getting on ships, getting off ships?
No. Getting off and. Getting through the water and onto the other side, you know. And because at that time we just thought, the invasion. We never thought about invading anywhere else, but, you know, this is, oh, they're taking soon. But then when they start painting the wagons black and green, we thought we were going home. It turned out just when we got in, I mean, we didn't get full details of where we were going until we were actually on ship, you know. We went on ship there, and we went on the most beautiful, Windsor Castle. It was the Castle Starline. It was a marvellous ship. And as I say, we went there. And
what date did you sail for Sicily?
Almost have sailed about the 3rd or 4th of June, because it was the 10th of June. And of course, what annoyed a lot of us, we're going up the Suez. The men sitting by the Suez were shouting, get your knees brown. No, we had been over there 2 years, Well, most of us had, and because that didn't go well. And I remember we had little concert parties. For instance, I didn't partake in them on the ship going up. We had Then that's when this officer said, want a better show from the signalers. He says, we never got any communication. Well, if a man's dead, he can't communicate. And that was it. Because there was more than men, there was officers and everybody dead. But as I say, we went and...
Do you recall the journey across the sea? Was it a quiet one?
It was quiet up the sea. But when we got to the Mediterranean was stormy. They hadn't expected it to be. And as I say, we're going along, and I was due to go with the 2nd Command Battalion. I forget his name now. But I was able to go with him, and the funny thing about it, we went on the ship, and we got a good meal, we got a glass of rum over the side of the ship and down at the landing craft. And our landing craft, the steering went, so we went round and round. I know with us was the naval OP, and it was a gun firing from the mountains, and it was crashing right at the harbour. And he called for shell fire, and he knocked it out within 3 shots. It was, we actually cheered when we saw what happened. But going back with landing craft, we all headed to that, we all had rum, rough sea, out of control boat. Rum, running back and forth, everybody was sick. I've never taken a drop of rum since. It was the worst sensation ever. Well, I mean, so far I've been a lucky fella. But I mean, landing in Sicily was luck again. Out of control, we land, and the battalion had to land at Avola. And they're fighting at Avola. And we walk on to the left of Avola. We walk into Avola, and the battalion's still fighting to get in from the other side. But then it was all over shortly after that. We are sitting by the roadside having our breakfast when the battalion come in. With this 2nd Command, he's one of these famous men that had the horn with him. He used to blow the horn.
You can't remember his name.
Was it Levet? I couldn't, I've been honest, I couldn't think. He's a big fella.
It was quite a long ride in from the boat to the shore, and this was at night, was it?
It was at night, yes. It wouldn't be that far. I don't think it was that far. I mean, you could see the shore well enough when we left the ship. But they're a big ship. I mean, we would be well off, because we're a big ship. Funny, I just talking the other day about it. There was a lad had been on the ship next to us, and we were going to Avola, and he was going to Syracuse, and I didn't know anything about it. Just standing, waiting for a pint on Sunday. He says, I seen your ship. That's pretty world.
So you didn't land at the right spot, and the battalion was scattered.
There was only us missing. The battalion was in the right place. We had the controller was out of pocket, out of function. The steering had gone. But we landed, and we were down, because he wasn't sure, but he guessed. He says, we went in, and we walked straight up, and walked in the back end of the town.
Did you see any sign of civilian life?
There was a few civilians just stood and looked at us, and that was it. I think they were dumbfounded, and we just walked past them. One of the nastiest things that happened there, I don't know if anybody else has told you, is after the official landing, we had this long march to the bridge. But then there was an Italian tanker, small tanks. They come running down, couldn't care less, they're just speeding down, machine gun on the side of the road. And they killed a lot of people. And they, you know, they toppled over the edge. They gave their life away, but by God, they killed a lot of people. One of our signalists, Harry Bell from County Durham somewhere.
Was this within the island itself, a few days afterwards?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall what you did in Avola before you started the advance?
Well, as I say, we sat down and we were, we had made ourselves a meal, you know, and I think we started getting the American ration, you know, the cardboard rations, because we, you know, we've been heart attack and we thought the rations were fantastic.
What was in them?
Well, you had, I all remember there was the rice pudding, and there was this lovely apple dumpling, you know, it was beautiful, and there was a soup, and never seen it again. I thought it would be a success. Tin of soup, you put a cigarette end on the bottom of it, and it fizzed up through this, and the can was red hot. You would think it would be somebody carried on after a while, but it was a great thing. Right? You just put a cigarette end to the bottom of the tin, and the tin was hot, and you opened it up. And the sweets and cigarettes for everybody, you know. I think it was seven men used to supply it, well, like a section.
Does food like that buck your spirits up after having hard tackle?
Well, you were looking forward to the food. There's apple puddings, apple and custard, you know. And of course, I didn't mention before, but going back, I mean, it was a thing we used to get in the desert, that tin bacon. That was beautiful, the Canadian bacon. And of course, those bottles of beer that used to come up, you used to get two every now and again. Mm-hmm. That was when that sergeant George used to say, "I'll put your patrol mind if you don't give us a bottle." But, you know, we're young when we're 20 when we met him, but we learned things off him. But then we get to Sicily, as I say, these tanks come down and they scattered everybody down the road, and it was a mountain path sort of thing. There was just room for them to get through. And he went right over the edge. Well, two of them did. They went right over the edge, but they caused a lot of damage.
Sicily would be entirely different to the desert.
Oh, it's different entirely.
What was the terrain like you were now fighting through?
Well, at this point, it was mountainous, you know. But then they got... We got down the coast, but you know when we got higher up, the march to the Plymouth Salt Bridge. Well, either side of the Plymouth Salt Bridge was the grapes, because that's actually where I joined my great friend Captain Atkinson. He was Captain Atkinson then, that's where I joined him. The two signals that had been sent to him, they couldn't make out who was in charge. So I was sent up, made me one stripe. I was sent for taking, it was the best thing that ever happened to me, you know. And
just before we come to that, as I say, the terrain was different. You say it was mountainous, presumably narrow roads from what you described.
Yes, sandy.
Mm. How did yourselves and the rest of the men settle into that kind of warfare after being used to such wide spaces?
I don't know.
Did you find it more difficult or the same or easier?
Well, I mean, you could see sometimes it was a secret, because, I mean, you could hide. In the desert, you couldn't hide, you know. Funny, I never give that a thought, what you said, and yet it is completely different.
But was communications using wirelesses, was that easy?
Was very good there. Very good there, yes. No bother.
And it was wirelesses you were now using?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Aye. Well, but when we... you would know about the battle. I mean, you've heard that from other people. I mean, I just joined on, and
this is your version.
I had to. I joined Kirby and Emister. Well, we'd been across the river before, you know, we're at crest of neck high, sort of style, to the side of the bridge.
Advancing on from Missouri Bridge itself, and the column obviously moving into it, and I think one of the other battalions, or both, had been over before you.
The 8th and 9th had been before this, yes.
What do you recall of the scene as you advanced towards the
river
of the bridge?
Well, the carnage, there was more bodies, you know, than anywhere. And they were all burned bodies. There must have been a lot of flamethrowers used, I would think. To this day, I think one place still keeps its name, Stink Alley. It's mentioned in a book or something. The Plimsoll Bridge book is mentioned in there.
Where is that in relation to the bridge?
Going towards Catania, it was on the left-hand side. But remember, there was somebody said you can walk across here, and it was, and of course you had to carry the wireless up like that. Keep the wireless above your head and your rifle above your head.
So you would go in with the 6th Battalion on the night, and were you at that stage of going in, were you with then with Captain Atkinson?
Captain Atkinson, yes.
He was commanding what?
Commanding B Company.
Before we go into it, you were meeting him for the first time, and you were talking about how well you got on with him. What was it that attracted you to him? What made your relationship so good?
Well, I went up and had him introduce myself, you know. And he says, oh, well, he says, that's better. He says, because these two are falling out between us. He says, I don't know who's in charge. So I went in there. Him and I went on a patrol. And he wanted to get right back to battalion. By rights, it should have been one of his own company, you know, with him. And he says, would you go? I says, I would love to go. And I went with him. And him and I went forward, a good long way. And because all we had lost was section. The section had been forward on a patrol and hadn't come back.
This is Primusoli Bridge?
We lost the section. And him and I had been forward to see if we could find this section. We couldn't find it. So we had to come back again. And... you know, you get on, and the sergeant mate at the time and all that was with me. Him and I got on well as well, and the other lad was a lad called Benny Littledyke. He lives at Fence Houses now. I don't know if he'd been with Benny, but he's a big lad, and he's well known in Fence Houses. And he was the lad that was the other signal with me. And we formed a good, great partnership, the two of us. But I was there, you know, they used to go for so long, then he come back again, then he went back, and it was the second time when the command officer refused to go through the river.
Just before we come to that one, the attack's gone in with the 6th Battalion, and you've gone forward what's your memories of that particular battle? What was going on around you? What were you seeing and doing?
Well, it's hard to see. You're just waiting for things coming over, messages coming over, and because we were the forward company, so they would depend on us getting them back. And what messages we wanted to go back, I think we got back, we couldn't see what they were exactly at the time.
Atkinson had a reputation of being a bit of a daredevil.
He was a daredevil, yes. later on, just before the breakthrough, we were in a shelter on the right hand side of the bridge, and it had been an Italian shelter, and it was filthy. And he says, oh, we'll have to get something. So he got on to get on the wireless. He just ask him if they can get any DDT to clean this hole out that we're in. And him and I, there was another patrol going, and he says, are you coming? I says, oh, yes. And we had two or three engineers with us, because it was mines on the road, and went up, and it was dark, and we come across mines. Engineers used to clear them with the bayonets them days, you know, and defuse them, and went through, and went over the railway line, And I think I've got a cut under the active reminders. When we dropped it aside, I landed among the grapes in one of the sticks. Cut it. It was in the chin. It was terrible. And he says, come on! And we went, and we seemed to go miles and miles. And he come to conclusion. He says, they've gone. He says, the bastards have gone.
You mentioned before about the second wave or something going in, and the commanding officer wanted to come back. What was that about?
That was, it didn't want to go. That was, well, my friend Polly.
You didn't want to go?
No, he didn't go.
Oh, he didn't go?
He didn't go. He was never seen in the battalion again after that. He didn't go at all.
Is there a point?
I mean, the second, that's when the second command threatened him.
Who was second in command?
That's the name I can't remember. The man with the horn. I can't remember the
Lower
name.
Lower Hunting Horn.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a point in any man, we're not talking about any one person, is there but from your own experience of men in action, and yourself of course, is there a point where your exuberance is curtailed in its experience and you're not wanting to show yourself because you get the idea that, you know, action after action, you're getting through it.
Mm.
Will you get through the next one? Are your chances lessening? And do men seem
I get your point, yes, sir. I mean, when we did all that, I'll tell you later when we before we come home, thinking that. It's got to get you. You're getting through it. Your turn's going to come next, or so it's stale.
What is it that keeps you going?
I don't know. Well, as I say, I was behind this officer who I had every faith in, you know. And as I say, I went on this patrol, and that was when we definitely agreed that there was a way that moved, and we passed back the message, enemy is gone. So the next morning we all had to move up. But as you know, the command officer that accompanied Jenny at the back, this command officer was front man. Him and I were running up the front. Come on, we come on, come on. Tell them where we are, tell them where we are. And went right into Catania, and the people say, where you been? He said, they've been gone for 2 days. And that was the greeting we got. And we went round the village, then we took a few prisoners, and that's where we found the prisoner for the Captain T.F.F. Chamberlain's cigarette case, you know. And so went from there, then we went up on the foothills of the mountain, and Jerry starts yelling with a mortar on us. It turned out there were the mortars they had gotten from the bridge. They were own mortars, they were firing onto us on the hill. And moved to another side of the hill, and he had to come again, and that's when I got me foot injured. That's where I got my foot injured, and they seemed to say the new old position all right. So he says, "Come on, we'll get off this mountain." So we're going off the mountain, and actually a shell landed between him and I, and didn't explode. Landed, so that's enough to frighten anybody. And I was a bit worried then, and I was shouting with a pain in my foot, come on, come on. And he says, how bad is it? I says, oh, it's terrible. He says, well, get yourself away to the doctor, to the, what do you call it, the ambulance station. And so I went to the ambulance station, and the doctor was a doctor from here. He was an RVI doctor, Dr. Joy. And the ambulance brigade was from Gosforth, the 149 Field Ambulance. That was from Gosforth as well. And when I was in hospital and through this with tonsillitis, it was the same people. And it was the same orderly. It was the same orderly. He says, you still here? He says, oh, she says, you're getting evacuated, you know. So the plane's coming at the airport, put it on the stretcher and put it in this field. the plane landed Dakota. And this young says, get these on board. I picked my stretcher up, threw it out and followed it. And had quite nasty heel, like, you know. Still shuffling in it yet, by the way. But it's never moved. I had trouble with the heel 2 years back and it was x-rayed. And it hadn't moved. And just last year I thought the same. And it's still in the same place. But so just stuck with it.
You mentioned that you took prisoners. When you take prisoners after a severe battle, and you see your pal and your friends killed and so forth, and then you find one with an officer's. Is there a feeling of revenge that comes?
Well, I know there was revenge wanted for this chap. I don't know what happened to him. I don't know, because they're just sent away from us. But I know somebody would have liked to kill him. if you see a person's friend and you know this man must have been attached to it, but then again, they're just doing what they've been told to do. Same as ourselves, haven't they?
Didn't see any instances of prisoners ill-treated in any way?
No, except I remember I kicked the one once. going up the bridge and we're coming down and I just give a back kick. And this lad behind us, he says, Joe, you must be in a bad temper. I said, just the way I felt.
This was at Primasoni.
They were coming out with prisoners. I just lashed out the one. Oh dear. But as I say, I came back and I went to Tripoli. And the hospital was full, you know, and they didn't have any towels. But for a towel, they gave us a pillowcase. Well, I had about 3 days' growth of beard, and you know, you couldn't dry yourself properly. And because when I woke up next morning, I asked sister about, I want to go to the toilet. And she says, you speak good English? I says, why shouldn't I? She says, you're a German. Am I? And it was the black stripes. And, you know, the way that I was, they thought I was just being thrown among the Germans. I got put right the next morning. Got put right there. They just took it for granted. Never seen them stripes before. And that was it.
How did they treat you in hospital?
Absolutely marvellous, I thought. And of course, I went away and they moved us from there and they took us further along the coast towards Algiers. And I went into a big convalescent camp. And my foot, I mean, everybody was getting prepped with saltwater bandages. That's all it was, saltwater bandages. And that's where I met a great fella, George Formby. He was great, you know. And when you knew he was coming, you know, and they built a big hole and put a tarpaulin in and filled it with water so he could have a swim. But he was great.
In what way?
You know, the way he entertained us, and the way he mixed with the lads, you know, he was wandering around as though he was one of you. I met up with him later on, and that will come later. And he was great, great lad. That's
Was your wound healing okay?
It was, yes, and it was, as I say, it was just salt water bandages, and more or less everybody was getting the same treatment. And we're getting I could get around a bit, like, you know, and I had one crutch. But then that's his phone became, and he tabbed us all up. And I don't exactly know where that one was, but it was a, you know, there was a good crowd of people, and because those jellies again, because these lads, there was nursing us this time, were from the First Army, you know, from the. they were saying when they had time to go home, I said, you've only come. We've been after, we've been yesterday, yes. And the bitterness still goes on. And they moved there and they moved us near Algiers, another convalescent camp. And I changed my lifestyle altogether. Greer Howard and I, his name's gone as well, formed a concert party. And here we start travelling North Africa to different convalescent camps, Americans as well as English, putting ashore. And we did very well till word come you can stop here and you probably get moved later on, or you can go home now to join the 50 Dave. Well, anyone's going to say I'm going home, aren't they? So we agreed to go home. Time came and we got a new great time built ship, the Monica Bermuda. Fantastic. And we're going out in convoy. And here, the sister ship of the ship I went out on, I went on the Richmond, this was the Bedford. And the Bedford turned and bumped into us and damaged our ship. So we had to pull into Gibraltar for repairs. Spent 3 days in Gibraltar getting repairs. Then came the time to go home, and it was getting near Christmas. So it was decided that we would be the first ship to leave Gib without a convoy. So we did, we came back, and we landed at Liverpool on the 22nd of December. Just time to get home for Christmas.